How's it going, everyone? In this episode, we find out how much fun you can have with a team. We have James Lowe, also known as Coach Ballgame, on this episode teaching us how to become better teachers. If you don't know who Coach Ballgame is, here's an intro.
My name's Coach Ballgame. I love baseball more than an aardvark loves sliced cucumber. My mission? To get kids to love baseball just as much as me. That's why my number one rule at camp, outrageous amounts of fun. Yeah! All right, ball players, trivia question. How many career stolen bases did Big Poppy have when his shirt was untucked? Zero. Guess who's got their shirt tucked in right now? Kevin Burkhart. When I say Kevin, you say Burkhart. Kevin.
Burkhart.
Kevin.
Burkhart.
Who's Kevin Burkhart?
Brookie Cookie. Mac and Cheese. Grazing Arizona. Just like A-Rod. Big Poppy. The Big Hurt. D-Train. Everybody at our camps gets a nickname. Lava Shades. You know why A-Rod was one of the best infielders of all time? He could play baseball with 3 pounds of sunflower seeds. You guys know how the Big Hurt got his nickname? His biceps are so big, it always hurt A-Rod's feelings.
Let's finish it.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of The Closing Pitch. My name is Spiker Helms, and this is a show about people, culture, and how to create a winning lifestyle. Across from me is David Berkby, and to my right, in a computer, on a screen, in California, is Coach Ballgame, James Lowe. James, how's it going?
It's really good. Thanks for having me, Spiker and Dave. That sounds a little bit like a great two-man band, Spiker and Dave. Let's go watch Spiker and Dave at the Roxy tonight. They're rocking out
Well, little did you know.
We actually do that on the weekends. We have a garage band.
I figured so.
We only play half of the song, and then we're done.
I see Dave on the banjo, and I see Spiker on the didgeridoo. I think that's your play.
So guys, we have Coach Ballgame on to this episode. The episode before this, it was kind of a prequel. I did not plan it that way, but it just was a good segue into what we are gonna speak with James. And this guy has an unbelievable Instagram account. He's been at the All-Star game in Cleveland. All of the material that they created for you, and then you just being able to share the good news inside of baseball was just awesome. And following him for a year, I was trying to see like how can I bring him onto the podcast that makes sense for him. And then he is actually going on tour with his Sandlots coming up. And I wanted to introduce him just on how he coaches, how he approaches the game. It's exactly what we talked about in the previous episode. And James, before we jump in, go ahead and give everyone a little bit of backstory, who you are and what you have going on in California.
Okay, this should only take about 37 hours. Go. My name's James Lowe, nicknamed Coach Ballgame, born and raised in North Carolina, a real small town called Franklinville, where I'll actually be doing a Sandlot in June. I go back every June and I run baseball camps in my hometown and do Sandlots and just make sure the little leagues in my hometown are on the up and up and doing the right things. But had two brothers that taught me the game, had a mom and a dad that were awesome. We had this big backyard where we could play all the different sports all day long. And it was me, my brothers, and my dad back there for most of my childhood, just hitting tennis balls over the house and shooting basketball and playing football and everything. And, you know, mom did everything else. She was the all-star mom of three boys. And she really taught me the importance of character and being a good person. My dad really shined a light on having fun when it comes to sports and not taking it too seriously. And funny enough, now that I've got Coach Ballgame up and running, that's really what I stand on and what I stress on the kids and the parents is building character, make sure they're becoming a better person, and having a ton of fun. And if they're doing those two things, they'll win more games, they'll win more championships, they'll become a better athlete. But you can't look through the lens of win, win, win. There's way too many cons that outweigh the pros there, especially in youth sports. So look through the lens of making them a better person and making them have fun. But, you know, played three sports in high school and then went to Brown University. I played baseball there for 4 years. I was a captain. My junior year, made All Ivy my senior year. And those are two special ones for me. I knew I wasn't the best athlete. I knew I probably wouldn't get drafted. I was the Dustin Pedroia, jump into walls and scream as loud as I could and dive head first and gritty, gutty. I hold the hit by pitch record at Brown, which I'm very proud of. very proud of that. The last plate appearance was against Central Connecticut and got hit right in the helmet. And I went and got the ball and flipped it back to the pitcher. And I was like, that's a great way to end a career right there, getting hit right in the head. But that was it. That was my final plate appearance. And yeah, from Brown, I knew I loved four things. None of which were business economics, which I studied. I loved playing music. I've always been a drummer and I loved playing music. I played in bands in high school and college. I loved creative arts. I love improvisation and acting and writing and comedy. I knew I loved that. And I loved baseball. So I said, I'm going to go to Los Angeles and figure out how to marry all of these interests, because that sounds like a pretty cool place to go. So I started coaching with a friend of mine who had played at Brown with me, got drafted by the Tigers, played with the Tigers and the Cardinals for a year, and then he moved to Hermosa Beach, California, and started coaching camps. His name's Dan Spring. He runs spring training baseball camps in South Bay, Los Angeles County. And that's pretty much where I learned how to coach. That was my grad school. He had a buddy named Sean Flicky, who played at Stanford with A.J. Hinch, among many others. And those two guys just got it. They knew what made kids fall in love with baseball. And so I just watched them and I learned from them how to coach the way I wasn't coached. I mean, I think all of us in our generation were coached pretty similarly, unless you had that diamond in the rough that was making it very fun. But everybody just went to the field knowing there's pressure to win and you need to win, you better win, or it's going to be a long car ride home and a quiet dinner at the table. But these guys flipped it on its head and they're like, no, there's so much joy in baseball and we've got to shine that light for these kids so they'll come back. And what I realized right away while I was coaching is a lot of these kids don't want to be there. They don't want to be playing. Their parents have dropped them off at a day camp and they don't love baseball. I love baseball. I would do anything to be on a field for 6 hours in beautiful sunlight. So that was the first thing I learned, was most kids aren't like me and I've got to reel them in somehow, some way. So along the way, I tapped into my music and my poetry and creative arts and creating characters and just trying to figure out what makes these kids tick. What do they love? What sends them home singing? The things they've learned. And so I started to tap into that. And what I do is I ask for nicknames based on things they love. And we'll spend 20 minutes before each sandlot or each camp doing that. And I'll get to know each kid and each kid will get to know everybody else. And I set the expectations high on, let's pay attention right here, right now, as we get to know each other. And in that 20 minutes, you get to know the shy ones, the gregarious ones, the ones that are climbing the fence that are going to need the most firmness, and the ones that are giving me that uncomfortable eye contact that's going to be a leader this week or this season in Sandlot. And you just get to know all of the different personalities. And, you know, And I've been doing it 16 years now, but along the way, you start to understand, wow, this youth coaching thing is one of the most important jobs out there, and it's definitely one of the most difficult to do. So I coached with Dan and Sean Flicky in spring training for about 8 years, and then I felt like it was time to start my own gig, and I was really pushed by my wife, who I met when I was 28, Mrs. Ballgame, Tara Jean Lowe. She said, okay, we're going to go to Orange County. That's where she's from, born and raised. And you're going to do this Coach Ballgame thing. And I was like, no. I like my safe. I'm doing lessons and I'm the right-hand man of a guy and kind of scared to start my own thing. And she's like, well, I'm not going to give you an ultimatum, but I'm going to give you an ultimatum. I'm going to break up with you or you're going to try and do this thing. Cause she really saw it. She saw where it was, but she also saw that I was a little scared to jump into those waters. So fast forward, our first camp was in 2016 and we had about 10 kids. And we did 1 week of summer camp, and most of those kids were family members. And then the next year, we did 2 weeks of camp, and it started to grow a little bit. And then in 2017, we started our first after-school program called a Sandlot. And that was just stemmed from a parent coming to me and saying, my kid's not having fun with Little League. He got yelled at. He feels pressure. He's not looking forward to going. He's not having fun. And I said, how old is he? And she said, 6. And I started to think, well, that's crazy. 6 years old. I didn't even start playing baseball till I was 8. Then I got another story from a kid. His travel ball team wasn't going to let him play on the team because he wanted to play soccer as well. And he had to play baseball year round on that team to be able to stay on that team. He loved all his friends. He wanted to be on the team with his friends, but he also wanted to be a kid and play soccer and basketball, as you should. I said, how old are you? He said, 7. And then another 5-year-old comes to me and says, we're going to give baseball one last try. One last try. I said, how old are you? 5. They had a bad story with you know, a coach just painting a bad picture in their brain. So it came on me pretty easily. You have a mission here, dude. You need to flip this narrative of youth sports and start to bring the fun back the way it once was. And so that's what I've done. So I started the Sandlot, which is just, we found a field with no dugouts. It's just grass with a backstop. And we threw down some bases and we started a game. And now in 2021, I've got 18 of those per week, spanning about 420 kids a week. 420 different nicknames in 3 different cities in Orange County. And just based on what I've heard from all the parents and how the word has really spread that this is something great for the kids, it's great for the families, it's great for the communities, it's now my mission to just bring this Sandlot all over the country. So in August, we'll be headed to St. Louis. We'll run Sandlots there, and I'll also be in Iowa before that for the Field of Dreams game. I'm going to run some Sandlots in a cornfield somewhere near there. And then from St. Louis, I go to Chicago, and then Pennsylvania, New York, and then we've got a lot of other cities that are reaching out. They want to do a Sandlot as well: Nashville, Tampa, DC, just to name a few. So I can't wait to really spread this seed and in hopes of bringing the joy back to baseball. So I think I made it in under about 10 minutes or so. Back to you guys.
You know what's funny about that is that there are a lot of fields out there that just have the backstop and the grass. And I remember like being little.
That's where we grew up.
Yeah, that's where you grab the bike. Yeah. Like literally the Sandlot movie was how I actually lived, except I wasn't in the 60s. It was 90s, but it was grab your bike. Let's go to the park. We got a basketball court. We've got a baseball field. Let's play ball.
Right.
And if you had three players, you had 4 players, you end up figuring out how to
ghost runners.
Yeah. Ghost runners. Let's condense the field down. Let's use a tennis ball or a wiffle ball instead so we don't have to chase it. Like, just little things like that. And it's a breath of fresh air, like, seeing your account, because again, we're in the baseball industry. Obviously, we run an organization, and it's serious, but also, like, it's the younger age groups. You got to have fun with it. It's not too serious. Don't go out there and start yelling at a kid for no reason, because they're not going to be able to make it to college or professional baseball.
Yeah,
but the thing is, when you start coaching, I mean, me, I started coaching that way. It's just kind of the natural way. It's like, okay, let's wean out the ones that aren't interested and the ones that aren't going to be good enough, and let's have them go do something else. And that's how I started coaching. I think everybody starts that way. Unless you're dropped down from heaven, I don't know how else you could look through the lens that I've started looking through in the past decade now of no, let's bring everybody in, because here's the reality of it. Hardly any of them are going to make it to the show, and hardly any of them are going to make it to minor league ball, and hardly any of them are going to actually play college baseball. When you just look at the numbers of that, that's not being pessimistic. That's just being realistic. And then it drives me as the youth coach to say, so what else is there? What's more important than them doing something that they're probably not going to do anyway? Well, how about just socializing with other kids and being able to learn how to conversate and tackle life's obstacles and learn life's lessons? And then when you see it as that, wow, it becomes so, so important. Because when I look back at the people that painted such great pictures for me and really molded me, it was the fun coaches. It was the coach that I looked forward to learning from and made it fun and had such an impact on the person that I am. So this elitism, you got to have the best team and the best uniform and the best equipment, and you got to be the best player, and you got to win the most games, and you got to get the scholarship. I say no to that.
You'll find this interesting. So Aspen, I don't know if you know what Aspen Institute is, but they do a state of play. And their most recent one, which is the pandemic one that they came out with, I think it was in October, but you'll find this very interesting, is that the top three reasons for parents to have their child play in a sport is mental health, physical health, and fun. Competition is actually on the far bottom end of it, which, again, a lot of it's nice to have competition. So if you're an elite ball player and you want to go play high competition, that we talk about this all the time. There's different segments of the game.
Sure.
And I think that going towards competition and trying to chase that status of elitism, like you say, I think is a wrong route. And I'm totally on board with that premise that you just brought in. So
yeah, like I said, the cons outweigh the pros big time. And wins don't really matter till you're on TV. Joe Maddon, manager of the Angels, he said, as a Major League Baseball coach, I need to win today. As a Little League coach, you don't need to win that day. You need to make sure your players are becoming better on that day, but the win, no. So I really use my platform with the kids to preach to the parents, because I stress the parents stay and watch and consume it, because they are a huge part of it. Each parent and each youth coach that's in those bleachers watching my Sandlot, they're going to impact hundreds of kids themselves if they're going out and coaching their kids' teams or whatever they might do. So I talk to the kids, but I'm really talking over them to the parents as well, hoping they soak it up, that if you've got a coach that's yelling at you or causing you to dislike the game, don't disrespect them, but just know they're not a great coach yet. They're learning. They're in grad school. They're learning how to be a great coach, because that is a number one. You got to make sure the kid's coming back next year and they are falling in love with the game because of you, and they're going to come back tomorrow because of the fun you're making it. And furthermore, set the expectations really high on character as opposed to wins and losses, and then you won't get the parent yelling at the umpire. How detrimental is that to our game, and how detrimental is that to those kids that a parent is yelling at a volunteer umpire who's trying to do their best? It really sickens me. So, that lens is what I always bring up, of looking through a different lens, and you just start to see so many more opportunities for good out there when you change those glasses.
You know what's really impressive is your ability to engage and keep the engagement of a 6 to 8 year old. Yeah. I don't know how many people find like how hard that is.
It's really hard.
For
really, long, really, really hard.
A long period of time.
Dynamite drop in, Dave.
Which is very, the color commentary is on point.
I'm trying. Looking for my spot.
How do you approach that? How do you approach the 6 to 8 year old that just, they're locked, like I've seen the videos, they're locked in on, like they're following you around. Like you have them in a trance almost, which is very impressive. How do you view that?
Yeah. And it's difficult trying to duplicate it or teach it. Because every coach is going to have a different kind of personality and different type of presence. But I'll tackle that question this way. I can't coach them unless I know them. So the first time I meet them, I let them know that I'm listening. I'm going to listen to you, kid. And name drop salute. Ken Griffey Jr. taught me that. I got to interview him in Cleveland at the All-Star game. Thank you, Joe Buck, for setting that up. And I asked him, what's your advice to me, Ken Griffey Jr., as a youth coach? And he said, connect. Just connect with your team, and specifically each kid. So taking the time to listen to each kid, look at him in the face and say, what's your name? What's your nickname? Oh, you don't have a nickname? What do you love to eat? What do you love to do? What's your favorite thing to do? And coming up with a nickname based on what we've gathered there, they trust me. I've earned their trust because I've simply let them know me, the coach, the guy in charge, is here to listen. So I think that's the word. It really is listening to your kids. And when you earn that trust, then they can become entranced, and they will listen to every word you say. And then you pull out the baseball cards and you start dishing out baseball cards to the kids that are making the good choices, that are not playing in the dirt, but instead they're in an epic team meeting pose, shoulders back, chin up. I get specific with the uncomfortable eye contact, make sure it feels awkward and uncomfortable. Just sit in that space for a good bit. Oh, you get a 1989 Donruss baseball card for that. Look at that. It's a Reggie Sanders. There you go, buddy. And it doesn't matter if they're a current player or a player from the 1800s. The kids don't care. They don't really know. A lot of these kids, you know, they've never played baseball. They've never been to a game. They don't know any players on the Cardinals team currently. So they see a 1989 Julio Franco and they go nuts. And every kid sees that. The kid climbing the fence, the kid playing in the dirt, the kid chewing on their glove that's not listening to me, they will pick that up. It might take a few weeks, but you'd be amazed at the amount of emails I get from parents of kids that look like they are gathering zero information, how much they talk about the Sandlot and the practice when they go home, and how much they sing the songs and recite the catchphrases that I bring. And marrying my love of art also really engages the kids. Catchphrases on skills, how to catch the ball correctly, meet, squeeze, and freeze, how to throw the ball correctly, point, knock, and fire, and then adding some dance moves or some rhythm to those. And then my drum, I bring the Cajon drum out. Another name drop salute. I got Rod Carew to sign it. It's the On Deck drum. That's a great story for another time. How in the world I met Rod Carew. But I have the drum there. And one of the first things we do, just to get my brain to memorize all the nicknames is they run the bases and I play the drum while I'm rattling off the nicknames. And by the third time around, I've pretty much got it. And I think that was a learned art. I couldn't do that until I started taking like acting classes and memorizing stuff, but that's a big part of it. And I treat it as a gift that I can figure out 50 nicknames in about 10 minutes, but that's how you get them. You listen, you gather information from them, and, now trying to get guys like you and nurses and doctors and electricians to jump on board and put in that much energy towards their youth teams that they're coaching, it's just super impactful and super important. And it's actually not that tough to convince guys like you to do that, because a lot of people out there, they're like, yeah, I have a day job, but this is where I feel like I'm making an impact, is after my work, I go to the field, I'm hanging out with my kids, and I'm bringing joy to this community of children. So a lot of magic happens at the Sandlot, a lot of magic. So
the memories run deep, because here in St. Louis, we still have camps, but there was a couple of camps and show that were really staples, and it goes back to the nickname thing. And I think that's what gravitated me more towards you, because I was like, this guy's doing what the camps did back then. It gave me a lot of nostalgia. And I always wondered how you came up. It was basically like a couple of kids got nicknames. That was it. But you've given every single camper a nickname. Is that true?
It's the first rule of Sandlot. I have three rules at the Sandlot, and rule number one is you got to have a nickname. So there are the occasional kid that they're like, no, just call me by my real name, and I'll be able to read the room, and if I can push them a little bit, I'll get to a nickname. But there are a few kids out there that just want to be called by their real name, and that's fine. I'm going to make sure, whatever I do, I don't push them away. I'm going to keep them wanting to come back. I really take that personally. If for some reason a kid doesn't want to come back, that hurts. And I'm not perfect, and it happens, but I really try not to. So, yeah, it's the first rule of Sandlot. Got to have a nickname. And then all the coaches have to have nicknames too. And when when a kid goes home with this nickname, they become this superhero figure, and they're like, Mom, I got a baseball card and a nickname. I am
so true.
I'm something. I'm super.
It's so true.
Oh yeah. But then it's almost like you've created this world where it's not real. It's not a real world thing. They go back home. They got to do their real life stuff. But then there's the Sandlot. Then there's the camp they get to go to and become this other person, this superhero kind of figure. And the smiles, a lot of smiles are going on. And I really love the sounds I hear from the bleachers. The sounds from the bleachers at a Sandlot versus the sounds at a travel ball tournament. It's big difference, and I'm almost, it's at the point now where I'm so used to the positivity and the joy. And every time somebody gets out, both teams go and they give that kid an elbow and say, get them next time. And all the parents screaming, you'll get them next time. Good try. I think my former self used to think, well, that's babying the kid. All right. How are you teaching them to want to win and strive to be the best? But I've learned, I can be firm when it comes to choices. I can be firm when it comes to effort. But when it comes to performance and when it comes to wins, losses, strikeouts, making physical mistakes, there is no room for negativity there. It's got to be bombarded with positivity. So, it's really nice to see parents jumping on board, telling their friends to come on board. And, hopefully we just change the game. We change the world.
What type of reaction do you get from a first-time camper or first-time parent? Because your experience that you're creating is probably like the polar opposite of what most kids' general expectations or experience of organized baseball is like. So, like, do you get pushback? Do you get, like, weird looks? Like, what's going on? Or
it's, I think I've got, it used to be. At the very beginning, there was definitely, like, whoa, I was really expecting, like, to feel anxiety for 90 minutes because I need my kid to do well. You know, that's just, that's kind of the approach parents drive to the camp with or drive to the game with is, all right, let's get anxious for 90 minutes and hopefully we don't throw up and hopefully my kid hits 3 home runs. But I've been doing it long enough and my social media presence is big enough now where people kind of go in and they watch my documentary. They watch my Instagram videos. They see the vibe and they're like, oh, they know what to expect. So, to answer your question, it was at the beginning for sure. It was startling. Like I've never seen a drum on a baseball field. I've never seen a coach with a fedora hat on. I've never seen grownups with funky nicknames dancing in front of all these kids. I've never seen a big group of kids laughing hysterically on a baseball field. They should be serious. But, you know, if I just keep punching that bag day after day, people are going to start to realize kids don't perform better when they're anxious. They actually feel 10 times more anxiety than you do as a parent in the bleachers. Multiply your anxiety by 10, and that's what they're feeling in the batter's box. Yeah, good luck hitting a home run with that. Not going to happen. So I think the ridiculousness of putting pressure on a kid in high leverage situations is becoming more clear to my clients and families that come. And yeah, they're starting to get it, but boy, am I sensitive to any kind of negativity from a kid, who's trying to be a bully or be mean, or even from a parent, in the bleachers. And I'm not afraid to let parents know that's not how we do things here. Mm-hmm. I think it's important as a youth coach to set clear expectations at the very beginning. We will not be, forcing our kids to go 3 for 3. We will not be saying anything with a negative tone during the game. Let's build these kids up.
So how do you approach the parent that starts yelling out mechanical things from the stands?
If it's on board with what is necessary, I'll let it slide a little bit, but it just hasn't, it's not that prevalent. There are definite moments, especially in my advanced sandlots. I do 3 to 5 year olds where you barely get a parent saying, hey, get your bat in the right place. They let me be the coach. And I set those expectations early on as well. Let me coach. You take videos and cheer. But when I do get some overbearing parent that just I can tell is not working, like you're bringing tears to your child's eyes while they're in the batter's box, I'll just have a chat with them. I'll take them to the side. I'm not gonna embarrass that parent in front of everybody, but whenever I can, I'll just go over and I'll whisper, thank you for your energy and for wanting to get your kid to be better. There's so many kids out there that need parents that care like you. But let me do the coaching while we're here. And just know that what you're saying is important, but your tone is even more important. So they're hearing your tone more than they are the words that you say. So when you're saying, don't strike out, hopefully they don't hear those words because that's going to really flood them with negativity anyway. But the fact that you're you're anxious about what you're saying, the anxiety underneath, that's what they really feel. So it's not working. I'm a big fan of getting better at skills, but I'm a big fan of that happening in practice. So what I'll try to do is send an email to that parent and say, okay, here's what you can work on throughout the week. And I'll meet you back here next week at the Sandlot and let's see if it's gotten better. You know, do this on the tee, work on this. But your tone is super important. So, I just talk about tone with the parents, the tone that you're bringing, because I'm super loud, but I rarely ever go into the, I try to never get into the negative space, but, so to answer your question quietly through an email, through a one-on-one with me and the parent, but really, again, thankful. I haven't gotten too much pushback on that. And even the talented kids that play travel ball where it's very competitive and I dabble into that space, I'm not afraid to grab onto my message and hold it tight and share it with this other person and say, you're wrong, dude. You're wrong. Yeah. I didn't used to be that way, but after doing it long enough and having, you know, people like Christian Yelich say, why does a kid need to be pressured to win when they're nine? And quotes down the line from major leaguers, college coaches, and athletes from all over the place. I went to a Super Bowl in Miami a couple of years back, and I just went on a mission to find out what makes a great youth coach. And I'm asking Kansas City Chiefs and 49ers players and coaches and Howie Long and Terry Bradshaw and Jimmy Johnson. And I'm getting the same message. Chill out. Eat some popcorn and relax in the bleachers. Let the kid play. If the dad that's yelling at their kid during my Sandlot doesn't listen to me, then I'll send them that video of Howie Long or Jimmy Johnson or Joe Madden or Christian Yelich. I'm like, you want your kid to be like them? Then listen. Yeah. Why is Mike Trout such a good outfielder? He was an all-state basketball player in high school. Don't make that kid play baseball year-round. Get him playing other sports as well.
Yeah, it's tough because like you want the kid to succeed so bad because you're rooting for him. It's obviously fans.
Yeah.
And fans are fanatics, and everyone's been to a Major League Baseball game. There are some fans that are absolute fanatics, and when you get to youth baseball and you have someone that you really truly care about, you become even more fanatic about it.
Yeah, I mean that's why I liked your approach there. With you didn't attack that person in that example. You didn't attack that mom because all they're going to do is get defensive because all they do is care. They love. They love their child. They want to see their child have fun, succeed, and they're willing to do anything for it. But you approach that example by trying to build a friend, by trying to build an ally, and really just basically telling them, I know exactly what you're doing. I know why you're doing it. And I love that. And I think that's an approach that we talk about all the time on our podcast, is that you're trying to build that game and you're trying to build experiences and bring more people in. You need more friends. You don't need more enemies.
About it. And I relate with them by letting them know I used to coach like that. I think everybody starts coaching in that way. And I learned that I wasn't having any fun and the kid was having even less fun. And they need that fun feeling. They need that. This is like a birthday party type of feeling to perform very well. And I want to quote a friend, Chuck Schumacher, who's a great coach in Nashville, Tennessee. He wrote a book on parenting youth sports. And I asked him on my podcast, why do parents yell? What's with this switch? Because I don't really see parents even engaging in practice. A lot of times they're on their phones or they're not even looking. But then the game comes and they start yelling and screaming. And he's like, here it is. When somebody is uneducated on a certain game or a certain sport, they haven't been there, done that, they haven't played college ball, they haven't played pro ball, they're uneducated on something, and you put their child, who they care more about than anybody else, in a high leverage situation, what do? They yell. They get anxious and they yell. I relate that to my first daughter being born. I had never been there, done that. I didn't know what it was like to see my wife birthing a baby and madness ensuing. And you just immediately have this anxious feeling, and all you want to do is just yell. That's what's happening with a parent of a kid that's got two strikes on him in the ninth inning of a baseball game. So, made a lot of sense to me. High leverage, haven't been there, done that. That's what happens. When I look at parents that have been in the Olympics or have played pro ball, they're not stressing out about their kid winning a game. They're just not. And it's like, why is that? They've been there, they've done that, they see the big picture. And they've realized what's more important. So educating these folks that just haven't been there, done that is very, very important. And, I try to educate that at my daughter's soccer games by sitting in my lawn chair and not saying a thing, and occasionally dressing up like Santa Claus and bringing gummy bears, to the games. And because these parents, they're like you said, they're not trying to do that. They're actually trying to do the, they're trying to help, and they're yelling, and they're like, yell. But actually, especially at a young age, when you've got a 3-year-old that hits the ball and all they want to do is run towards the ball that they just hit, if you can get real quiet and you can just say, hey, give me that bat. Okay, now follow me. And you just kind of quiet the thing down. Meanwhile, 50 parents are yelling, run to first, run to first, run to first, like a siren, right? But I try to tell the parents of younger ones, you got to slow it all down. You got to say, hey, can I have that bat? Yeah, just put it in my hand. Yeah. Now follow me. That's how they learn the best. And so what, that the guy that fielded the ball ran over and tagged first base before the runner got there? Who cares? That's not important right now. That 3-year-old needs to learn after they hit it to go to first base. So flipping everything really on its head. And I think it transcends baseball too. It can go into many other sports as far as, screaming at a boy or at a girl or teamwork, all of this stuff. There's a message here that transcends even sports.
I enjoy your ability to diffuse tough situations too, especially hit by pitches. The post that you made about when you get hit, there are different ways that you can approach getting hit by a pitch. And one of them is you doing a backstroke towards the pitcher's mouth.
No doubt about it. You did your homework on my goofiness. But yep, I get a lot of, I did lessons under a floodlight behind a McDonald's for 10 years, as I tried to build my own coach ball game camps and sandlots. And half of the lessons were kids afraid of the ball because they're getting hit. It's a big deal. And I've written blogs on it and done podcasts on it of how ultimately it just takes time. Every kid's going to go through it. Every kid's going to get hit. And it's a great life lesson to learn, but you can't push them. The more you push them to get back in the box, the less they're going to want to do it. So it really does take time. It happened to me. I remember the guy, Derek McKee, he hit me when I was 9, and he threw faster than anybody in my town in North Carolina. And I was on my heels for the rest of the season. And it really just took stepping back in the box and treating it like a stairwell, getting stronger and stronger and stronger and braver and braver. But what a life lesson to learn that when you get to first base, the pain is gone, but you've just earned the respect of so many people, the fans, the umpires, the other team, all your teammates. They're like, man, I want to be like that kid. He's tough. Because you were able to, get over that obstacle. So, I try to bring a little levity to the tough moments with my video on doing the backstroke to the mound, but all in the name of good sportsmanship and lots of fun.
How we've talked about it a little bit. How do you evaluate the success and failure of a 5 to 9 year old or 10 to 13 year old, or even when you start getting into the high school age, how do you evaluate those three different areas, those different age groups?
It does change just a little bit as they get older. You look more at the skills and are they picking it up? But for all three, it's character. It's the type of person they're becoming. Period.
So it's not even skill set. It's more of what type of person is this child becoming, and are they on the right path? It's not about the wins or the losses or, man, Johnny hit 15 home runs in one season.
99% of the skills I learned were my junior year of college after I batted 242, and I needed to fix my swing. I needed to figure out what went on. I didn't really learn much at all in middle school or high school as far as skills go. I didn't have a great swing. I didn't have a great approach. I was a good athlete, but what I learned was in college. So before they're even 12, their motor skills aren't defined. They're not going to be able to do a lot of the things that's going to make them have a perfect swing or a perfect throw. You want to make sure they stay healthy. But if I'm teaching them to make good choices and put in 100% effort and be a good teammate and be kind and hustle and get down and ready and pay attention, then they're going to show up a little early when they're 13 to batting practice. They're going to stay a little late in the weight room when they're 16 because old ball game taught them how to be a good person when they were 10 or 11 or 12. As far as getting into high school, looking at that, I'm still much into the lens of, is that kid really having fun? And is that kid becoming a better person? The skills will come if those two things are happening. And the cream will rise to the top from any place, from a sand lot where somebody's taking a video of this kid taking batting practice or a travel ball tournament in wherever. The cream will rise to the top. But I saw our best player in my hometown burn out by freshman year of college. Full ride, North Carolina, third baseman, starting as a freshman, and he was done. He was urged to be a college baseball player when he was 8. And then when he actually got to college, he just wanted to be a kid. And so it really worked backwards on him there. So yeah, I'm just a big, big fan of the character, and then the skill set will come, and then you'll just see it happen. It'll be like, wow, they're starting to grow hair on their armpits, and they're starting to get a beard, and they're starting to, it's all starting to come together. But yeah, again, our character.
I always think back to like, oh, I want my kids to come early. I want them to practice earlier. Mm-hmm. I want them to beat everyone to the field. All the good habits, right? Basically getting ahead of everybody else, right? So that we're able to attack the day. I always feel like the best way to get someone to do that, it goes back to, well, are they having fun at the ball field? They're right. Not going to come early if you're literally saying, are you getting in the training? Are you working out? Are you getting to the field early? Like, that doesn't really give a good response. But if you're having fun, everyone ends up coming to the field a lot earlier. And they're like, oh, I really enjoy this culture. I really enjoy this family.
It's the difference between like feeling like a job and feeling like a party, right? I mean, what do we as adults, what would we rather do? We'd rather go to a party and listen to a fun band and dance. So I get some serious joy out of seeing these 12 and 13 year olds come to my sandlot, and I tell them the Roberto Clemente story. I've got Luis Clemente's autograph ball right here, his son. I tell them how Roberto was the most electric player back in his day, and fans just loved watching him. But he grew up using a lemon for a ball and a stick for a bat. We're going to use this one tennis ball. Throw your gloves in your bag. Throw your helmets in your bag. We're going to play with a tennis ball and your bat, and we're going to have fun. And the amount of joy and laughter and smiles that you get from a teenager that's being notified there's no pressure to win. Every time you get out, you're going to get congratulated by everybody on the field because you tried your best. And to hear that 13-year-old say, yo, this is fun. Like surprise, it surprised them that this game was fun. It's so eye-opening. Like, yeah, the game is not fun in their brain. They're going to a game thinking job, work, clock in, clock out. And then when you throw this at them, they're like, wait a second, this is really fun. I always do staring contests for bang bang plays. Whenever there's a close play at a base, safer out. Okay, first baseman and the base runner do a staring contest. And I mean, you've got 12, 13, 14-year-olds out there just vibing and digging on this staring contest, laughing and, oh, he blinked. It's like, we're pushing these kids to win these big trophies at these big tournaments. All they want to do is have a staring contest. How about that? So
maybe we should start implementing that into the USSSA standards.
I've been pushing this for a while. I think MLB and everybody should make rules. You got to have an instrument in the on deck circle and mandatory staring contests for all bang bang plays. Because I mean, when you watch a major league game, excuse me, or a college game, look during rain delays, what college kids are doing. I mean, there's some fun stuff going on in the dugout, yeah. Man. They're doing some crazy stuff. And with the pros, with all their handshakes and, the amount of failure and disappointment that you're going to have in baseball, that's enough. You don't need to add spices to all that, by yelling and pushing them to want to work. Throw the fun spices in there. Because 7 out of 10 times, it's demoralizing.
So I think I know how you're going to answer this question, but I'm going to ask it anyhow. Because when Spiker asked that question, like, how do you evaluate or define success? And I think if you ask any youth player or youth parent nowadays, you know, how's your kid doing? What are they going to go to? They're going to talk about, well, he went 3-for-3 in his last game, or he went 0-for-3, or his team's 10-2, or whatnot. And they're just going to throw a lot of stats at you. How do you combat that?
I just did a podcast on it, and because I've had multiple parents come up to me and say, hey, Coach Ballgame, and I say, hey, how's your kid doing? And the first thing they say, we lost 2-1, 2-for-4. Oh, he struck out 4 times. He only threw 45 pitches. He walked 4 guys. That's the first thing they say. And I immediately say, no, but how's he doing? has his girlfriend broken up with him? How's his mental state? How's his mental health? How's he doing in school? How's his amount of what's his joy level like when he gets to the field? What's he like after the games at the dinner table? Like, how's he doing? And then, you know, We get some different answers, and then I ask that coach, how's the rest of your team doing, you know? And maybe I'll get a different answer. Well, Lime Stewartson is not paying attention a lot out in right field, and Raising Arizona is hustling to his position nonstop, and you just start to. You kind of give them a different pair of glasses to look through, like, man, let's throw these in the trash, right? Yeah, how are they really doing?
That's awesome.
It's a good question to ask on paying attention in right field and left field for young kids, because I get that question a lot for coaches. Like, man, he's doing really well, but like when he's in the outfield, he just does not pay attention whatsoever. He's spacey. He's really spacey on this. How do you deal with that?
Well, I'm allergic to negativity, and I'm allergic to boredom. So I have invented ways to kind of keep everybody active, and I call them salutes. So and there's cues too, and I've learned this in teaching school. I was going to be a teacher, so I learned how to kind of keep everybody aware and attentive. So every time there's a foul ball, I say PU. And everybody is supposed to say, that ball smells foul. And whoever, it's a great t-shirt idea, right?
Yes, it is.
And every time, you know, whoever says it the loudest, I go give them a baseball card. So there's a little bit of bribery to it, but so is parenthood and everything else. You know, you're going to chase the biggest contract with the biggest money. It goes all the way through the world. But yeah. I award those good choices. That we have a song called Dance on a Toilet where we dance, dance, everybody dance on a toilet and hold pizzas in your hand. And you know who that's the universal down and ready position in all sports. But you know, if I see a right fielder doing that or singing that song, you know, they're going to get an award. I'll also have kids stand on my back while I do 50 push-ups. If something really excellent happens, like a kindness award or a hustle, you know, somebody really standing out, I'll just make things really big. And sometimes I'll bring the guitar out and sing personalized songs to the players that are really doing awesome choices. And yeah, you're going to have that right fielder where you try everything. And, you know, you clear out your tool pouch of ways to try to get them to become more attentive and more energetic. And it just doesn't happen. And you have to be okay with that. I kind of take it personally at the start and I'm like, man, I didn't do my job. But again, I have to have faith that they're going to go home and they're going to think about the fact that I care. That they have a coach that cares. As long as I can make that kid, and there's not many of them, but there are kids that just choose boredom. It could be a mental health issue. Maybe they're depressed. There could be something going on at home. And I am the only person that's really, in a positive way, pushing them to be a better human being. Well, then they go to bed knowing I care. So, yeah, I go as far as I can go. And then I just say, okay. That's all I can do for today. We'll see you again tomorrow, and maybe we'll get one more step up the stairwell tomorrow.
How do you view structure? Because someone that's probably listening to this or listening to our conversation be like, man, this sounds like an awesome experience, but at some point there has to be some type of structure to a degree, especially if a kid wants to go play college baseball or professional baseball. How do you view structure?
Now, I want to make sure I get the question clear. When I hear structure, I think organized. I think cones in the right spots, and I think kind of laying out expectations before we can have all of this fun. I make sure that they know that we're going to be very organized. We're going to be by our cones. We're going to pay attention. And do all that stuff. But I think what do you exactly mean again by structure?
So I'm going down the route of when a player is saying, all right, I want to go play college baseball or professional baseball.
Like your development process?
Yeah, your development process.
Yeah, good.
How do you get to a point where like, all right, we can still have fun, but to accomplish big audacious goals, like you played at Brown University, I played at Missouri State, Dave played at Missouri S&T, like that, like you said in the beginning of the podcast, that the numbers aren't for you right now. Like you're climbing up Mount Everest.
So how do you go. Well, I learned early on, I can't do both. I can't do the kid in blue jeans that's never played and train the 16-year-old that's definitely going to be a D1 player. So I there's not enough days or hours in the day to do that. So I have a bit of a feeder system where I've found like-minded coaches in my area that run travel ball teams that are great. And it's a good place to be. It's positive. What I'll do is when I see that player or I have a parent email me and say, the Sandlot has been great. Now they're ready to take it to the next level. I've got somebody that can give them private lessons, a former major leaguer or a travel ball team that I I respect and a coach that I respect, and I'll send them there. But yeah, at the start I was like, I think I can try to do both, right? I can get that 30-minute lesson in and teach them a great change up, but I can also run sand lots. I've found my niche, and I've found my place, and I've found coaches in my area that specialize in, okay, this is a real deal, and I send them there.
How do you approach that with parents, like making sure they recognize it and they're not pushing too early? So it's not that 9-year-old parent that's like, all right, we're going to play at Vanderbilt when he gets to college. Like, how do you approach that?
Yep. Quietly and realistically, you know, again, I'm just pulling them to the side and having a one-on-one and letting them know that Mike Trout played multiple sports, 3 sports, all state in basketball. Jackie Robinson played 4 sports in college. And I just quietly, without getting them in the defensive zone, just let them know big picture. Look at this thing way more big picture. And if I'm not challenging your son enough skill wise, that is fine. I totally get that. I've got a former major leaguer that's doing private lessons, and I'll give you his number. There's a travel ball company I respect very well, because again, if I'm coaching 20 kids at a sandlot, I can't spend 10 minutes on this kid's launch angle. So I know my zone, but yeah, at the same time, when they're 9, I think the first thing I stress is big picture, and the burnout thing is real. Physically and mentally, the burnout is real, and you've got to make sure that doesn't happen.
Well, the numbers are actually showing that too, where before it was 12 or 13 years old, that was when you started seeing the numbers drop just because you're starting to see high school, but it's actually dropped to more of that 10 and 11-year-old range, which is a little bit of alarming.
It's scary. I mean, game adoption nowadays and how long players are actually staying in it is, there's so many other options, and attention spans are so short, and, you know, if you don't make it fun, they're going to go find something else that's fun. And so that's why I love what you're doing and the atmosphere that you're creating with the younger baseball players of the world, that, you know, it's not all about your swing and getting your front foot down on time and all the other things that are talked about all the time. It's different.
Well, baseball is escapism to a degree.
Well, that's what it was for me.
Yeah. And now esports is becoming the escapism, and that, which is really scary.
Yep.
Like, again, I'm all about the virtual reality. I think that is awesome technology, but at the same time, there's nothing like grabbing a bat or throwing a ball. I mean, I still enjoy it, and I'm 31 years old. So,
and just knowing how to have a conversation with another human being in person.
Huge.
You know, yeah. Learning huge. Those skills. That's why I'm driven. And I saw it about a decade ago. I saw it seeping in, kids playing on iPhones and iPads, looking down and not going out and having conversations with people and looking in their eyes and just socializing. So yeah, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, and I'll die trying.
What are we getting right in the youth sports community? What do you think we're doing right?
We're caring. I think we care. And that's right, because you go into certain parts of the world, there are not adults that care. There's not adults that want to coach or want to take care of the fields. And these kids just have they're behind the eight ball. And, you know, a lot of them figure it out on their own. They have the natural talent to get where they need to get. But man, how much easier would it be to just have somebody teach them about being a better person and finding the joy in life when they're at a young age? Wow. Super, super important. And so getting it right with caring, I dig that. I see that big time in youth sports. Now, how can we turn that care into causing children to want to become a better person and fall in love with the sport that they're playing. Now we got to look, we got to step into their shoes. We're caring in our shoes, but now we need to step into their shoes and care just as much.
How do you view the parent, coach, and player relationship? It is my opinion, it's very dynamic, mm-hmm. especially in the youth sports community as we see now. How do you view that relationship?
Well, it's very important, and you know, it's got to be. It's everybody's got to have open ears. You got to make sure that everyone's listening to that player. I mean, that's the one that's playing. That's the kid. You know, it's like the baseball in the game. Like the game revolves around this little thing right here. You just watch this thing, and it goes. That player is the one playing. So everybody, listen to them. Are they happy? Are they upset? Are they feeling pressure? Like, you've got to pay attention to that player and then react to what you see there. So it's important.
How do you deal with that, with like a player that says, like, man, they hop in the car and they're like, I hate this game. I don't like my coaches. This game sucks. I want to quit. How do you deal with that player? Because do you just say, all right, we're going to take a break from baseball? Or
it could be, and I leave that up to the parent. But, you know, at the space that I'm in right now, I get a lot of those kids. I get the kid that needs to rinse themselves clean of the negativity and the pressure and the wanting to quit baseball. That's when they come to the coach ball game Sandlot, and they're revived, they're rejuvenated. So that's why I've built this space, and I get a lot of parents that have that kid do that, and then they're like, man, I need to text coach ball game and get this kid back into just normalcy. But yeah, it could be a break. It definitely could be a break. And, you know, there are these coaches that paint these bad pictures in these brains, and boom, they don't want to come back. So I always think of, at a young age, painting so many good pictures that the bad pictures that are bound to come, the good ones will outweigh it, and they'll still be able to, you know, get to that big picture end game. But yeah, it depends on each kid. Take a break, play a different sport. And you know, I had an email the other day of a kid that's just demoralized because their coach is too militant, not giving him enough playing time. He's giving 100% effort, but the coach really just doesn't like him and is causing the kid to dislike baseball. And the parent was like, we've taught our kid to never quit anything, but you know, you're going to stick with it. And I had to say this, well, I don't like quitting either, but it could be a point where you're actually saving baseball for this kid by having him walk away. This coach is causing this kid to want to quit. So if he's going to be done with the game of baseball, you might be saving baseball for him by cutting him loose. Because, again, this coach is trying to do the best they can, and they think they're doing the right thing, but they're just not. They're not there yet. And, is it multifaceted. And I think, to answer your question, as far as the dynamic, it's different for each parent. And you just have to look as a coach through the lens of, are they wanting to come back tomorrow? And am I making them a better person? And then taking the wins and the losses, and to a point, the skill development, throw it in the trash and then revisit it after you've built the love back.
It's interesting. With coaches is that you get really devoted to an idea, and you're like, oh man, winning is so much fun. Everyone's having fun. But in reality, it could be the complete opposite. And it's almost like auditing your lineup and saying, all right, who's having fun? Who's not having fun? And why are they not in a good state of mind?
I use this example all the time. So we obviously, as coaches, we deal with a lot of players who, for whatever reason, have a lot of anxiousness and really just don't, whether it be certain scenarios in a game that that cause them to have negative thoughts, or they feel too much pressure from outside influences, etc. I use this example with them all the time because I think every kid is, at one time or another, has played wiffle ball with their friends. And I ask them to explain that experience. You know, okay, say you're pitching to, who's your best friend? It's Johnny. Okay, so you're pitching to Johnny. Well, what are you trying to do? Well, now you get a weird look. I'm like, what are you trying to do? Well, I'm trying to strike him out. Okay, cool. What's Johnny trying to do to you? Well, he's trying to hit a bomb off me. And what if Johnny hits a bomb off you? Well, I go get the ball. And what do you do next? Try to strike him out. You're having fun. There's no pressure. There's no nothing. That's what this game should be about. So trying to get them back to that mindset for me is paramount, and then we can move on from that.
That's what love about the Freddie Freeman and Rizzo.
Oh, it was awesome.
Back and forth. Yeah. This year has been just unbelievable. Getting him in a rundown and yelling at Freddie while he's running down, and then also him striking him out during the game, and then Freddie just tipping his cap and saying, I can't believe I just struck out.
It's a great thing for the game.
Yeah. They had their own TV show, basically. They should have their own TV show, those two. But they're two great examples of joy. I mean, they find the joy in baseball. And to your point, Dave, what I try to stress to my kids is competition's fun and it's good and I miss it. And I love when I get back into it, even as a 38-year-old man. But you've got to find the good parts of competition. You can't focus on the negative parts of competition, losing or striking out, you know, the negative stuff. How about all the positive stuff that's fun? Like, these stakes are a little bit higher because they're trying to strike you out and you're trying to hit a home run. But then afterwards, you're going to give each other a fist bump or an elbow and be like, man, that was really fun. But it's the culture that you set up from the start. Like, if you're setting up this culture where the wins and the losses are not important, I'm going to give out awards at the end of this game for the people that made the great choices, the kids that turned the page quickly after a strikeout, the kids that hustled to their position. When you set that culture up early on, and then you break out the tennis ball at a 14-year-old practice and say, hey, let's do it like they used to do it, where, you know, you've got an Albert Pujols license plate bent as a bat, and you've got Rod Carew throwing this lime for a ball with twine wrapped around it. When you're doing it like they did it, well, then their mind gets blown, and they're like, oh, so me striking out in this high leverage situation isn't a very big deal. And it's novel to them, but it's very productive. So, man, create a culture of fun right out of the gates. And then I think you're going to have less tears after losses and hopefully less anxious parents.
This kind of reminds me of you passing out baseball cards, but my dad, we got onto this team that was very serious. Like, it was like high end stakes. Like, if you don't get a hit, you're crying to the dugout. Like, it was one of those toxic teams. And so he slowly brought himself into an assistant coaching role, and he had the idea of Skittles. So anytime that you got on base, he gave you a Skittle. So every pillow that you touch, he gave you Skittles. So everyone was trying to touch as many pillows as they possibly can so that they can get candy when they get back into the dugout.
But step into the kid's shoes in that instance right there. That's not babying in their book. That's not babying or bribery even. They're just, they have a general thought of, this coach is fun, you know, and this coach is kind of like a kid like me. And that's where you're really relating with your kids, where, man, you get a Skittle if you get on base, but you're not going to get yelled at by that Skittle dude when you mess up. and when that line drive is being hit in your direction, and you've got 2 seconds to put a good step on it and a good catch, those 2 seconds are less stressful for a child. And And then, boom, if they do make a mistake or they do miss, oh, well, I'll get that Skittle next time. But you're not going to get yelled at because of the mistake. That's one of the most ridiculous things for me is just knowing that a kid is going to fret because when they make a mistake, which they're going to make, they're going to get yelled at for it. Well, let's just give this guy a big plate of failure because they're gonna fail nonstop when they're afraid of failure.
What's your thoughts of the MLB showing all these emotions? Trevor Bauer has been active on Twitter. I actually thought one of his tweets was pretty funny. He's like, anybody that wants to me to be the BP thrower of their home run derby, I can be the BP thrower. But there's a lot more emotions in the game now than there ever has been. You actually had a post on Albert Pujols who hit a home run and he didn't really show much emotion. You were like, he is absolutely fired up. He is fired up.
Well, I know Albert and I've met him and I kind of see he's got some fire within and he'll kind of just he'll downplay it on the exterior. But I like the emotion a lot. And here's why, because I feel like baseball 2 years ago was behind on the times as far as seeing NFL players being embraced as far as celebrations go and bat flips. And I dig it. I think it's great for the game. And me as a player, I was full of emotion. I screamed so loud at every pitch. And I really, really dig it. And I think kids dig it too. They want to see Fernando Tatis do that thing he does after a home run. And you know, Trevor Bauer, there I think there are times when he steps a little bit too far, but hey, he's trying to grow the game and he's doing his wiggles and his dances. And yeah, I'm all about it. I mean, I'm the guy that throws a drum in the on deck circle and, you know, have floss dance competitions and many, many other things. When somebody has quick reflexes, we do a kitty cat salute and we see who can do the best impersonation of a cat. And we'll spend a good 30 seconds where kids are doing it. And then I give a baseball card to the person who did the best cat salute. Same with a mongoose. And a funny story about the kitty cat salute. There's a kid that tried my Sandlot, didn't really like baseball or want to play baseball because his brother was super talented and he didn't feel like he matched up to his older brother. So he's like, well, there's no place for me in baseball. Tries the Sandlot. He's super talented. One of the most talented kids at this advanced Sandlot that I coach. And the kitty cat salute and the Sandlot and the vibe has really broken the shell and his personality has come out and, you know, he's showing off his dance moves and his electric vibe. And his parents are really shocked, like, wow. This is what it took. It took a Sandlot. But, yeah, showing emotion and getting into it and finding the fun, I think it's great. And I think people are starting to realize it. Even the old guard of baseball is starting to jump in. Fergie Jenkins has got his own Instagram account and he's tweeting about things. And baseball should be very, very fun. So MLB can make that clear, do it.
Is there a point for you where celebrations become too much?
Yes. And here's what I always do is I'll bring two kids up that have been giving me uncomfortable eye contact or being great ball players, making good choices, bring them up for an attaboy challenge or a staring contest where they just scream attaboy back and forth or they stare. Same with girls, add a girl challenge. And then afterwards, one person won, one person lost. And I'll say, okay, dinosaur boy just won, but did he make the other person feel sad? Did he say na 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 boo boo ha ha, or did he show empathy? Did he get into the shoes of the person who lost? And we give him a sportsmanship salute. This is the sportsmanship salute. So, and what about the person that lost? Did they throw a fit? Did they throw their helmet? Did they cry? Did they sit on the ground like Richie Tenenbaum in the movie Royal Tenenbaums and take his shoes off after that tennis game and just sit there? No, he did not. He said, good game. He gave him a fist bump. So I set those expectations very clear to empathize with the person that messed up and to turn the page on the person that lost. So there you go.
So do you think you like seeing the celebrations at the youth level? Like if they celebrate a big win or a big hit?
As I last night we had a game winning hit in the tennis ball game, and I saw 10 kids overjoyed. I saw the other 10 kids sad, but it wasn't to the point of tears, because the 3-2 win wasn't the point. Right? The making good choices and the having outrageous amount of fun and finding the positive aspects of competition, that was the culture we set from the get-go. So at the end of the game, awarding two players on the losing team that gave a fist bump to the winning team and said, hey, that was a great hit, well done. And same for the winning team, you know, giving two awards for people that backed up a play in the third inning, right? That's paying attention and doing well there. It's the culture. It's the culture that has been set up by the coach and by the parents. I'm fine with it. And you know, there are definitely moments where I see a kid going overboard and causing somebody else to feel sad. It happens every day, actually. And I'll just stop the game and I'll take that moment for a teaching moment. And I'll say, okay, how'd you make this kid feel? Right? Sure, you won. He might win tomorrow and you'll lose. Step into each other's shoes for a second and try to become a good teammate.
That's so important.
I take it as a teaching moment.
That's so important, because the celebration, if you don't teach it correctly, the kid could go overboard, yep. And then obviously you see in college it gets a little bit of rowdy when you're not on the same wavelength. You're not tipping the cap and be like, hey, you got me this time. Yep. I think that's super important. And, you know, you could see it in Major League Baseball when guys get
tempers,
upset.
Yeah.
Yeah, tempers flare. Yep. I mean, Cardinals and Reds, it seems like almost every series there's something that happens. But,
absolutely. But, yeah, you know, then – when you're dealing with adults, you know, hopefully my lane and my job is to build these kids' character as children and as young men and women, to when they get to that point of college or adulthood, they're not doing that, you know, and they can make their old coach ball game proud.
Well, James, we are heading into the final stretch of this podcast. And I want you to deliver the story on Bubba and the Sandlots, because what you are about to go on, the journey that you're about to take this summer, I think is very important. And if you are in a city that he is going to be in, if you are in a, I feel like if you're in a 50-mile radius, you need to be there. I think it's so important, especially because you're doing coaches' clinics as well inside of these things too.
That's a big part of it. That's the most important part of it for me, is to make sure that I'm getting coaches to hop on board to this message that we've talked about for 90 minutes, as because they're going to touch so many more lives than I'll be able to in that town. But yeah, this has been something I wanted to do for a while, is take this Sandlot on the road, take my wife and daughters, get in the van, go to different states and drop bases down and spread this message that baseball should be very fun and pressure free, and we should look through that lens that I always talk about. So it never became a reality, because I had to be here in Orange County to put food on the table for the family. And then this guy watched my documentary, and his nickname is Bubba. And he watched a documentary that Joe Buck had produced, and it was just about me and my wife and my kids and how we run these camps and sandlots and make baseball fun. And this guy, Dave Schreckengast, he was a teacher and a coach for 70 years, and so was his wife. And they loved kids, and they loved baseball, and they're big Pirates fans. And they just gravitated towards the message that they saw in my documentary. And when he passed away from cancer, which he had been diagnosed with prior to seeing my documentary, when he passed away, his wife called the next day and said, "You don't have any idea how much your documentary moved my husband, who just passed away from cancer after a long fight. But in lieu of flowers, we want to raise money and give it to you, Coach Ballgame, and have you do what you wish with it." And I was like, is this a prank call? This has to, I mean, this just doesn't happen. Nope. They raised $20,000. They sent it to me, and we were sitting on it during the pandemic, because we're like, what do we do? Kids can't get together. We thought maybe we'll go to Los Angeles and run some things in the inner city. And then me and my wife sat down and we're like, the Sandlot's really, really growing here in Orange County, and people are starting to get it. We need to take this message around the country, other states, other communities, other little leagues. They need to just sit in this space and feel it. Because when you come to a Sandlot in person, you just have this magical feel. Like, magic happens at these Sandlots. You know, you just have great moments of life lessons and character building and just joy. So we called the family and we said, we've got an idea. We're going to, with your $20,000 you've raised, we call it the Bubba Scholarship, because that's his nickname, Bubba. We're going to be able to fly to Iowa and we're going to run free Sandlots for the kids in that town of Dyersville, where the Field of Dreams game is going to be located. And then we're going to drive to St. Louis and we're going to rent a van and get a hotel in St. Louis with the money you've raised to run camps or run our Sandlots in St. Louis there. And then we go to Chicago and then we go to your hometown of Pittsburgh and we run one there. And then we go to Elizabethtown and we go to Williamsport and we go to New York City and beyond. And we'll just use every penny towards getting me and the girls to these towns and running these Sandlots. So I got on the phone. I started calling anybody I could to find boots on the ground, because that's what I need. I need boots to find me a field and get the word out that we're doing this thing. And that's what we've started to do. So yeah, if you're anywhere near St. Louis, come. It's free. And if you attend, you get a free ticket to the Gateway Grizzlies game that night. I'll also be doing a special Sandlot for the Pujols Family Foundation on August 16th, that Monday, at the Miracles Field in St. Louis, because how cool is that? Kids with Down syndrome playing baseball and getting nicknames and having fun. It is just great work that Albert and Dee Dee are doing there. So it's because of this family, Bubba, we're able to do all these things for free and hopefully raise money for local charities in that town. And my plan and what I think is going to happen is I find a coach ball game in each town. I find a coach ball game in St. Louis that gives the community an alternate option. It gives that 12-year-old in blue jeans that's never played before a chance to play baseball. And we call it the Coach Ballgame Sandlot. And how fun would that be to find the greatest coaches in each town, in each state, and create a Sandlot league in those towns and, you know, employ thousands of people? That's my goal. That's my thing. I see it happening. And we've started to do it on a small scale in Orange County. And hey, before you know it, we'll change the world. As long as we're not selling burritos at McDonald's, you know, as long as my coach ball games in St. Louis are spreading my message and not that other message, then we can really make a difference.
How can people register for these events?
Yeah, coachballgame.com. We put it up on the website where you just sign up with your name and your phone number. And these are free that are coming up in the summer. So you're not paying anything, but that way we know, okay, how many 3 to 5 year olds are coming, how many 6 to 9s, how many 10 to 12s. And then based on how many kids are rolling in, we'll get coaches in the community or high schoolers in the community to come volunteer and help coach. And that's a big deal too, getting high schoolers to come volunteer and help and hear the message as well. And then learn how to work and how to make a living and how to work with kids. So yeah, coachballgame.com, and follow me on all the social medias. We'll always be posting flyers and updates of addresses and times and all that.
Well, James, count me in for the coaches clinic. I'll sure that I am there for that date. So you've got one sign up right here.
Good.
Make it two.
One, man. Make it two. You just got to change one life. You know, it only takes one.
Coach Ball Game is on Instagram, right? That's the big account that I think that people really need to follow. I think that's, for me, you learn a lot just by the videos that you post. And obviously you put your podcast on there as well. So
Coach Ball Game on Insta. I kind of have a weekly routine. Mondays is an instructional video. Tuesdays is usually something to help coaches out a little bit with teaching their teams. Wednesday's a podcast on coaching and parenting. And then I do a lot of stories as well of the Sandlots I'm doing. So yeah, I love getting DMs of, hey, you've really helped me coach my T-ball team or implement skills for my 12-year-old. Same on TikTok. Actually, TikTok has more engagement than Instagram as far as instructional videos go. My YouTube channel has longer form videos and videos with major leaguers and things like that. And then you got Twitter and whatever, Facebook, all of them. Just get over it. Get across the board. Even MySpace.
Well, James, I appreciate it, man. This has been an awesome podcast. Seems every time that I have an encounter with you, even though you just met me for the first time, I'm learning something from you. So I really appreciate that.
Honored, man. Honored to spread the gift. And yeah, it's not me, anything I've done. It's just baseball. Like, baseball has a magical way of changing lives. So yeah, thank you, baseball.
Yeah,
I'll tell you one more thing. Kudos to you for what you're doing. You're gonna see an impact now, but I can't wait to see the impact that you're gonna have and your message is gonna have 5-10 years down the road, because I think that's where we're really gonna see this message just go through. So kudos to you. Thank you for everything you do.
Hey, thank you for saying that, man. That means a lot. And yeah. We'll just continue to boom, keep pounding.
Guys, thanks so much for joining us in the podcast. Please subscribe to the channel. Give us a review, 5 stars preferably. Also, we're doing the YouTube thing, so if you want to subscribe to that and see Dave's pretty face, go ahead and subscribe to that channel as well. We'll catch you in the next episode.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for watching or listening or both to The Closing Pitch. If you'd like to get your closing pitch featured on the show, we use a podcasting app called Anchor, where you can submit your statement or question via audio. Or what you can do is comment in the comment section of this post. We also accept direct messages. Please give us the A-OK if you do send us a DM to use your statement or question on the show. Last thing, please give us a review on your platform of choice, 5-star preferably, and we value your opinion, and this allows us to reach more people. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you in the next episode.